the only tool missing from your belt. Simpro, total business software for the trades. When you choose Simpro, you get the digital power tools of the trades that make work, work. Founded by trades, for the trades. Simpro is your solution for scheduling, quoting, inventory tracking, and easy workflow management that grows with you. Join more than 200,000 users worldwide who trust Simpro to help them run and grow their business. We're here for you, so let's get to work.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Security Insider podcast, and our guest today is Dr. Tony Jakes. Dr. Jakes is the Director of Issues Outcomes, a firm specializing in issues and crisis management. For more than 20 years, Tony worked in corporate issue and crisis management, mainly in Asia Pacific, and served two terms as a director on the board of the Issue Management Council for Leesburg in Virginia. Tony is an experienced conference presenter on issue and crisis management and has run professional workshops in Australia, New Zealand, the USA, and throughout the Asia Pacific. In addition, he is the author of four books in the field, most recently, Crisis Counsel, Navigating Legal and Communication Conflict, and Crisis Proofing, How to Save Your Company from Disaster. Tony is also a prolific writer and has contributed to Security Solutions magazine on a variety of occasions. He writes on issues and crisis management and has been widely publicized in leading management journals, peer-reviewed publications, and so on. He also teaches at a number of universities, including RMIT, where he completed his PhD in the field of issues management. Tony, welcome back to the podcast.
It's good to be back, John.
Now, Tony, this is an interesting issue that we're discussing today, which is the field of crisis communications. And this has evolved a fair bit over the last few years, as we've seen, I suppose, growing concerns and calls for organisations to become more socially responsible or take a greater hand in social issues. And one of the things I'm hoping today that we get to discuss is, well, should they? We've seen issues around the recent conflict in Gaza with organisations coming out and making public statements about support of one side or another. We have seen the same thing in the war in Ukraine. We've seen things around gay marriage and all sorts of organisations, from McDonald's to everyone in between, taking public stands on these issues. So first question to you, I guess, is it necessary in this day and age for organisations to take a public stand?
Necessary is a really, really good, word, John. There are people who will say to you that companies should, as I quote, stick to their knitting, shouldn't talk about things that have nothing to do with their business. On the other hand, there is a lot of research that shows that consumers want people to speak out, want CEOs and organizations to speak out on social issues, and companies need to make a decision. Are we going to do that or are we not? Because there's one thing we know for certain: if we do speak out on a highly contentious public issue like the ones you mentioned, we are sure to satisfy some people and do the exact opposite for other people. And we know there have been surveys done. People say, I want my company to speak out about social issues. But those same people also say, and if they take a stance that I don't agree with, then I'm not going to buy their product or I'll boycott them.
Yeah.
So it's a cliche to say you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. That's an old cliche. But in this case, it's really, really true, because my view is that there's often not a lot of upside. And sometimes when people say we're responding to pressure, my feeling is that sometimes they're responding to actually a small group of people who may or may not even be customers.
Yeah. It seems that there is a small vocal minority within our societies these days that have a growing presence and power in these issues. And again, I am more than willing to admit that, you know, maybe I'm just sticking to my rusted old on principles of years gone by, where I think, you know, if you have nothing useful to contribute, then, you know, stay silent. But I don't really understand in the case of, and I'm just picking on them because they're the first one that comes to mind, but I don't really understand why McDonald's, for example, or any other fast food chain has anything of any relevance to say about a war that's occurring in Israel?
It's a really strange situation, John. I think that I read an article and the author said, when I go to buy my McDonald's, is my first question, what do McDonald's think about the war in Gaza? And the obvious answer is no. But one of the challenges we have, and I'll talk about this in just a second, is employees.
Right.
And often it's employees who say, we want our company to speak out. We want to feel proud of what they're saying. Now, I got approached by a small not-for-profit organization in Melbourne 2 weeks ago. And they are set up mainly to provide service for volunteers, and they're run by volunteers. And they decided they were going to say something about the war in Gaza. And so they put out a very, very neutral, yeah, we don't like violence and we hope that peace can arrive soon sort of statement. What happened was that their employees started posting messages on social media saying that this organization is condoning genocide, which of course they weren't. And they rang me and said, what are we supposed to do about it? And my question to them was, yes, you've got a vocal minority of employees, but do your customers care? Have they stopped coming to your facility? Have they stopped buying your products? Have they stopped coming to your training programs? And if the answer is no, then you have to say, and you don't say it publicly, you have to say, so what?
Yeah.
So what if some employees are very angry? Because, I mean, the truth of the matter, and again, you wouldn't say this publicly, is if you're not happy with the organization, then you know what the alternative is. Now, obviously, you'd never, ever say that.
Yeah.
But you do have to think about impact.
Yeah.
Is the concern or the alleged concern of some people having an impact on our business? And if the answer is it's not having an impact, then it might reinforce the decision to say, let's just stay out of this particular fight.
Yeah. Now, that impact is the heart of what we're talking about today, because whenever an organization decides that they are going to step out and make a public statement about some of these highly contentious global issues that are going on at the moment, there is always the aspect of unintended consequences that we have to consider. And in the rush to be seen to be saying something, there are all sorts of security issues that can arise, because again, if we come back to issues like the conflict in Gaza or the conflict in Ukraine, by taking a stance one way or another, you create potential for damage to people, property, assets, facilities, and all sorts of things carried out by those who may take exception to your particular stance. And I believe that you've seen numerous examples of this occurring in your work around the world.
Yeah, there are plenty of examples. I mean, there was a good example began in the United States where the Starbucks decided they'd make a statement, a very modest, mild state, neutral sort of statement, and the other people objected, and the result was that a number of protesters vandalized Starbucks stores in the United States. And that wasn't just there, because what happened in Melbourne was that protesters about Gaza also went in and vandalized some Starbucks shops in Melbourne, and then went on and vandalized some McDonald's shops as well, because exactly the same thing happened to McDonald's in the US. The company made a very neutral statement, but then people objected that wasn't enough. Because one of the problems with making a statement, John, of course, is that whatever you say, somebody will either say, it's not enough, or you're completely wrong, we totally disagree with you. So that's a major problem. And then the other difficulty is that even by saying nothing, you're sort of making a statement, and people will object to that too. And so obviously they're going to aim at high-profile organizations. But let me give you another example. In Melbourne, some anti-Israel protesters occupied a factory in Melbourne, which was supposedly making parts for jet aircraft used in the fighting in Gaza. And they occupied the place, they vandalized it, they graffitied all over it, and the police were called, and it became quite a confrontation with people, the police using pepper spray and so on to get rid of these people. So became a substantial security issue, simply because protesters decided they would occupy this factory and sit in on the roof.
Yeah.
And that happened just recently. And just this week or last week, a man in Melbourne was arrested for graffitiing a Woolworths store because he believed that Woolworths had dishonored the country by refusing to carry Australia Day merchandise. Now, the company had already explained that the reason they did that was nothing to do with patriotism. It was to do with the fact that people didn't buy the stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But this individual decided, and as I say, it was just about a week ago, that he would go and graffiti all over a Woolworths store, and he's been arrested. So again, there can be real world results of these actions of people communicating or not communicating, issues that are complicated. And the other thing, if I can talk for a moment, is that you talked about the Ukraine and Gaza wars in the same sentence, but they appear to have had totally different impacts.
Yeah.
When thousands and thousands of companies around the world issued statements attacking the invasion by Russia of the Ukraine, and that caused very, very little reaction. But this war in Gaza, in my experience, has become almost a unique situation. Society hasn't been as divided about an issue as they have about Gaza ever since, I don't know, maybe the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Views have not been so polarized and so angry as they have been about this Gaza war, and it seems to carry on. We see the same in universities in Australia and overseas, with students arranging sit-ins and occupying offices and protesting about what's going on. In the case of the university in Sydney, for example, pro-Palestinian students occupied part of the building when the Sydney University shut down one of their rallies. But at the same time, Jewish students said they were not being sufficiently protected against anti-Semitic attacks. So the university found itself stuck between these two groups and without much idea really what to do next.
Yeah, I think, for fear of falling afoul of exactly what we're discussing here today, it seems that, you know, the situation in the Gaza area is just so complex, with so many different moving parts, so much historical context, so many different aspects and colors and shades of light and gray, that, you know, again, the modern media has this tendency to try and reduce things down to simplistic, simple point of issue type discussion bits, which just doesn't work in the context of a conflict like this. You can't just say, oh, it's down to this or it's down to that, or it's, there are so many different moving parts to this that I think you could be a scholar who spends his or her entire life studying this situation and still not particularly understand all of the nuance of what's taking place.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It is a very, very complex situation. And it's made worse, I think, John, by the fact that every night on the TV, we see horrendous pictures of the impact of what's going on in Gaza. And you have to be a pretty cold-hearted person to say, I don't care, that's their fault for supporting Hamas, when you see women and children starving and being bombed. And so it's very, very hard in such a highly emotional situation to not take one side or the other. And and these things aren't really thought about. But I was going to mention, if I may, another example, John, of how security issues can arise, with a case that took place a couple of years ago, when H&M, the Swedish clothing company, put out a catalogue of kids' wear. And one of the photographs was a young 14-year-old black boy wearing a hoodie with the slogan on the front, "The coolest monkey in the jungle." And somebody thought that seemed like a pretty smart thing to do. But of course, it was attacked viciously on social media and elsewhere as being totally racist. But in South Africa, It went far, far further than that. And what happened is that H&M stores around Johannesburg were attacked by protesters who vandalized the stores, went in, caused a huge amount of damage, and H&M ultimately shut down temporarily all of its branches in South Africa because of the racism allegations made by this photograph, for which I should add, John, they had already apologized and already withdrawn the photograph, but of course the damage was done. And so it became a very, very serious security issue for the company.
Yeah. Well, I forget who made the original quote, but it goes something along the lines of never attribute malice to that which can be explained by stupidity. I mean, it seems like there's no shortage of people coming up with dumb ideas that can also be fraught in the public space.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is from Albert Einstein, who supposed to have said, there are only two things that are infinite. One is infinity, and the other is human stupidity.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think we can talk all day long about crisis communications, but if you don't take a good long hard look at what you're putting out through the lens of is this necessarily a clever idea, then no amount of crisis communication is going to wind it back. So the natural question I guess most of our listeners are probably asking at this point is, well, if it's decided that we need to step into the fray and for whatever reason make a statement, is there a way that they can try and advise the senior leaders and comms people within the organisation to do this that's not necessarily going to result in buildings burning down around their ears?
Yeah, that's really the bottom line. I think that, I mean, I've spent a large amount of my life working in the area of crisis communication generally, and about the need to have management listening to communicators rather than ignoring them or listening to lawyers as well. And so in the same way that I emphasize that communicators need to be listened to, I think that security professionals should also be listened to. But I think they get overlooked. People say, what has this got to do with security? And the answer, as we've just been discussing, is it is very, very much to do with security and can have a very, very direct impact. So I'm not talking about the we must have a seat at the top table argument, which we can debate at some other time. But I think it's clear that security people are often overlooked or not listened to when some of these decisions are made. And I think that one of the things that security people can do is to talk about what's the impact if we don't get consulted and brought into the discussion. Now, I'm not a great believer in scaring the pants off management by giving them worst possible case scenarios. I'm not a fan for that. But I think it is reasonable for security people to say there's more to this than just communication.
Yeah.
There are implications. And when it's a highly emotional issue, like Gaza, then that's very, very real.
Yeah. I had the pleasure some years ago on another project of interviewing a gentleman by the name of Ed Van Cise, who was at the time, may still well be, the director of operations for the International Space Station. And I said to him, you know, what is one of the most important lessons that you have learned managing and controlling the International Space Station? And he said, we have a concept here at NASA called first information, which is we never, ever, ever respond to the first piece of information that we are given. He said, if I am, for example, off in the coffee room and I'm making myself a cup of coffee and someone runs in and says, the International Space Station is falling out of orbit, and I don't then verify what is going on through three or four other sources, I may enact a chain of actions which result in a much worse disaster than what is actually happening. And it seems that this is something that we need to adhere to in the comms space, because we saw a very well-known Australian landmark on the eve of the attacks going on in Gaza, you know, come out in support of Israel without necessarily, they didn't have the time to have all of the facts in the situation, and it caused no end of trouble for them. So are there steps that we need to take in thinking about and crafting responses if we're going to give these kinds of responses?
I think that's really gets to the heart of the issue, John. I think that we talk about stakeholder management. And when I talk to students, I always say to them that understanding your stakeholders is the foundation of good communication. But the point is that we should be thinking about internal stakeholders too. And that often gets overlooked. We think about the angry customers, the people who are on the social media complaining, and we think about sometimes our shareholders, but we're not thinking about our internal stakeholders. And to me, the security people are internal stakeholders. And they have a major role to play, and that role can get overlooked if they're not consulted. And so I think that somehow they need to be putting their hand up and saying, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Should we put additional staff in place after we make this particular decision? What are the implications of what's going to happen? Because unfortunately, my experience is that managers often don't really think about the implications of their communication decisions, and putting a pro-Israel sign on a major landmark was a perfect example of not really thinking through what that meant. And so when we talk about our stakeholders, and they might be, as you described them, a vocal minority, they might be a vocal large, they're not just a minority, it might be a very, very large audience who are being very, very vocal. But that doesn't necessarily mean you just do the first thing that comes to mind to calm them down. But I think that one thing that I've learned from the Gaza situation is that saying nothing is also a statement.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting for a moment that you have to say something. I think when we started this conversation, you said, is it a necessity?
Correct.
I'm not suggesting for a moment that it's a necessity to say something, but I think we do have to understand that saying nothing is in itself a message.
Yeah.
And that needs to be thought through as well. But you also need to remember that no matter what you say, it's never going to be right.
Yeah.
It'll never please everybody. So this is a problem managers have. And I think that there's a lot of jumping on the bandwagon. We don't want to be the last people to speak. This happened during the same-sex marriage debate in Australia. It also happened during the voice debate in Australia, where many companies thought, I need to be seen to be saying something. And the answer was, in some cases, no, you didn't need to be seen to be saying something at all.
Yeah, I definitely feel, and again, this might just be my perspective, that there comes a point, and we saw this recently around International Women's Day, where so many people were coming out and making statements around International Women's Day, which is a fantastic initiative and should be celebrated as far and widely as possible. But you got so many people across so many aspects of society making statements about it that it kind of started to lose its impact after a little while. And there was an air of skepticism that crept into it where it's like, is this just a free grab for some public attention on behalf of the organizations making the statement?
Yeah, I saw that too. And sometimes it's called the bandwagon effect,
yep,
where people feel they need to jump on the bandwagon. And in fact, I saw that some of the organizations of International Women, some of the organizers, I'm sorry, of International Women's Day were accusing companies of cynical marketing, which had nothing to do with the issue and actually worked against the interests of women. And so there is that happens. But I think that the Gaza situation is a much more fundamental one, a much more fundamental one. And even though IWD does have some lessons for us about the bandwagon effect, and if you're going to say something smart. I mean, my old mum always used to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything.
Yeah.
And that was not bad advice, really, because it's a shame when a serious thing like International Women's Day gets hijacked by people for stupid marketing.
Yeah. Now, for fear of doing exactly what I was accusing the media of before and trying to reduce things down to simple point solutions, are there some basic do's and don'ts that we need to follow if we are going to try and craft some sort of public statement that won't get us into hot water?
Yeah, I think that if you're going to say something, recognizing that not everybody will be happy, if you're going to say something, you should be talking to your communication people, which sometimes doesn't happen. and we see CEOs who say dumb stuff. You do need to be consulting your lawyers, even though I've written a whole book about the conflict between lawyers and PR people. You should be consulting your lawyers. And I think that in the context of our discussion, you should also be consulting other internal stakeholders, including security, saying, is there a security implication of what it is we're going to say? If you can do those three things, and of course that takes time, which takes us back to your previous point, don't have a knee-jerk response. Take your time to think about it before you do it.
Yeah. And I guess in closing too, you know, we spoke about the vocal minority that might be driving some of these things. Sometimes as the security manager, it's worth talking to those people and pointing out the reality of what may happen to them as employees of a company who's come out publicly and made a statement. If you do so, if I am, say, you know, a young person who works for ABC Concrete and we want to come out in support of one side or another, and I say, you do realize that if we do this, then you may be the one that's at risk of being attacked on the way home from the concrete plant.
Yeah, there is. When you come to deal with people who have very, very set views, sometimes trying to give them the facts is not always helpful. I always think of the situation, you know, if you're in the middle of a really serious argument with your spouse, it's not helpful to say, I hear what you're saying, dear, but let me give you some facts. That doesn't go down very well. And so you do need to be thinking about what you're going to do with those people, but you should certainly talk to employees. Because in the case of Starbucks, going back to our earlier discussion, it was the Starbucks union that came out and talked about Palestine, not the company. And even though the company said, that's only the union, it's not us,
yeah,
that didn't matter. Didn't matter. And it didn't stop large groups of Jewish leaders calling for boycotts of Starbucks. So I think the bottom line is you need to understand which stakeholders are really, really important. Because sometimes the people that are protesting is just a man and his dog and a keyboard rather than any really substantial body of opinion. And you have to say, will we really respond just to that?
Yeah. Well, as Donald Trump so famously said, don't try and confuse me with the facts. Now,
Yes. Now,
Tony, if people want to find out more about you, get in contact with you or find your books, where do they go?
They can go to my website, which is www.issueoutcomes.com.au. That's issue singular, outcomes plural, issueoutcomes.com.au. And on that website, you can see a lot of what I've written. A lot of it's hot linked already, and there's also links to my books.
And you have a regular newsletter that you put out as well that people can subscribe to.
Yeah, the website has a sign up for my newsletter, which is about issues and risk and crisis. And my next newsletter, which is coming out in about 10 days' time, is about thought leadership, about how you can be a thought leader in your industry. And so that's another topic which some of your subscribers might like to think about. How can I be a thought leader in my industry?
Well, we get no shortage of people approaching us saying we want to be positioned as thought leaders. And my advice to them is always, if you want to be positioned as a thought leader, then you better have something worth saying.
Absolutely. To be a thought leader, you have to have original thoughts. And that doesn't happen by getting the PR guy to write a statement for you.
Exactly. Well, Tony, thank you once again for coming onto the podcast. And we look forward to talking to you next time.
That's my pleasure, John.
And ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, if you've enjoyed this podcast, there are plenty more like this one in the ASIAL Security Insider series. You can find them on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Blurberry, the Google Play Store, and all the other great places that you can find amazing podcasts. And we look forward to catching you on the next episode. Have a great day.
The only tool missing from your belt, Simpro. Total business software for the trades. When you choose Simpro, you get the digital power tools of the trades that make work, work. Founded by trades, for the trades. Simpro is your solution for scheduling, quoting, inventory tracking, and easy workflow management that grows with you. Join more than 200,000 users worldwide who trust Simpro to help them run and grow their business. We're here for you, so let's get to work.